He had just called to hear her voice.
John, where are you?
Her voice was urgent. I have a place, was all he was willing to say.
Was that you in the paper? 3 dead people on the eastern shore?
I'll get back to you, he said quickly and hung up. He grabbed a paper at the corner dispenser and glanced over the article as he walked back to his apartment. What does Xantha know about me? It was too late for recriminations. Screw it, son. They have her. His mind worked quickly, cataloging his situation. He needed help. And where else to get it but from the people for whom he had killed? Admiral Greer, please, he said into the phone. This is Mr. Clark.
Hold, please,
Kelly heard. Then, you were supposed to call in yesterday. I can be there in 2 hours, sir. I'll be waiting.
Where's Kaz?
Maxwell asked, annoyed. I already called his home, sir, Maxwell's aide answered. No answer.
That's funny. Check it out.
10 minutes later, an Air Force security police officer drove to Admiral Podolsky's home. He knocked on the door. No luck. Next, he tried the bell. No luck. He opened the door carefully. There was no sound. He called a few times, then walked slowly up the stairs towards the bedrooms. Admiral Maxwell was there 20 minutes later.
Heart attack, the Air Force doctor said. Probably in his sleep.
That wasn't true of his wife, who lay next to him. She had been such a pretty woman, Maxwell remembered, and devastated by the loss of their son. The half-filled glass of water sat on the night table beside the pill container. They'd had a meeting planned to talk about retirement, Maxwell remembered. Somehow, he wasn't surprised.
God have mercy,
Dutch said, seeing the only friendly casualties of Operation Boxwood Green. What do I say? Kelly asked himself as he approached Admiral Greer's office.
Hello, John, Greer said, still reeling from the news he'd received half an hour before from Dutch Maxwell.
Greer pointed him to a seat next to Bob Ritter.
Glad to be back home, Mr. Clark, the field officer asked.
There was a copy of the Washington Post on his desk, and Kelly was surprised to see that the drug killing story had made the first page there, too.
Yes, sir.
Why did you want me to come in?
I'm offering you a job in my part of the house, Greer answered.
Doing what?
Whatever we tell you to do,
Ritter answered. He already had something in mind. Kelly's instinct battled against his reason. Then he decided that he had to tell the truth to somebody. There's a problem, gentlemen, he said, and pointed to the newspaper article. That's me, sir.
What are you talking about, John? Greer asked.
Kelly explained.
How many?
12, sir, he answered, knowing that Ritter wanted the total number of kills.
Good Lord, Ritter observed, wanting to smile.
There's one other thing, Kelly said. I think I know how the bags come in. Asian heroin, the bags smell like embalming fluid. They're using the bodies of our KIAs to bring the fucking stuff in. All this, an analytical ability, too, Ritter thought. The prisoners were brought out in the darkness, hobbled, and herded along with vicious blows and kicks. The Vietnamese captain watched with satisfaction, pleased that his troops would soon be killing Americans like these in large numbers. Zacharias stumbled as he moved toward the truck. They were going somewhere. He could hardly speculate on where he might go. Nothing could be worse than this place, he thought, as he was shoved into place in the back of the vehicle. The colonel bowed his head and whispered a prayer of thanksgiving, and then, for the first time in months, a prayer for deliverance, whatever form it might take.
So, what do they know? They have Xantha alive in Somerset County Jail,
Charon said. This is trouble, Piaggi observed. We lost 20 keys, man, Tucker pointed out. They were inside the lab being set up in the warehouse in East Baltimore.
We've got to rebuild the whole organization, Piaggi said to Tucker, who was pacing restlessly.
It's a matter of covering your tracks, Charon went on. Xantha is just one person, not much of a witness. And if you move to another area, you ought to be okay.
The other ones have to go fast, Piaggi urged. Let me call Philly. Next, we have to keep my friends happy. We need 20 keys worth of stuff processed and ready to go, and we need it right fast. I only have 10, Tucker noted.
I know where there's some more,
and so do you. Isn't that right, Lieutenant Charon? It was a time for introspection. Kelly had never done anything like this before at the behest of others, except for Vietnam, but that was altogether different. This time, the police had his name and his face. It was just a matter of time before he was spotted. But he couldn't turn away, not from Pam, not from the men of Boxwood Green. But he wished they'd asked someone else. There was a knock on the door. Wally Hicks stubbed out his third joint of the night and went to answer it. You're Walter Hicks?
Yeah. Who are you?
John Clark. I need to talk to you for a few minutes, if that's okay.
What about?
Boxwood Green. There are some things you need to know.
Come in. I only have a few minutes, though.
Hicks didn't recognize the danger that walked into his apartment.
What do you want?
I'm here to kill you.
What?
Hicks almost laughed. You betrayed your country. You betrayed 20 men.
Look, that was a matter of conscience.
So's this, Mr. Hicks. Clark reached into his pocket and pulled out a plastic bag. In it were drugs he'd taken off the body of one of the pushers, and a spoon and a hypodermic needle. He tossed the bag into Hicks' lap.
I won't do it.
Fair enough. From behind his back came his K-bar knife. I've done people this way, too. There are 20 men over there who ought to be home. You've stolen their lives from them. Your choice, Mr. Hicks. Hicks' face was very pale now, his eyes wide.
Come on. You wouldn't really...
You are an enemy of my country. You got 1 minute. Hicks looked at the knife that Clark was turning in his hand, and he knew that he had no chance at all. He'd never seen eyes like those looking at him, but he knew what they held. He considered jumping from the chair, but his visitor was already leaning forward, extending the knife a little, and his eyes fixed on the thin, silvery blade. He had trouble drawing breath. Peter Henderson knocked on Wally's door. It wasn't fully closed. Henderson pushed the door open. Then he saw him there, sitting in the chair. Hicks had his left sleeve rolled up, the reason for his death jammed inside the elbow. Peter knew he had to get out of there. He took his handkerchief and wiped the doorknob, closed the door, and walked away, trying to keep his stomach under control. Unbeknownst to Ritter, Cassius was still on the loose.